Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So, this morning we begin our reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, leading up to Gaura Purnima, Lord Chaitanya's appearance day. I'm supposed to be reading from Adi Lila, Chapter 3, called The External Reasons for Lord Chaitanya's Appearance. So, the thing is this, that this chapter is 73 pages. And there's no way we're going to get through 73 pages with everybody being staying awake and everything between now and 8:15. So we're going to try to do this in a way that makes sense. And the best thing that I was able to come up with was this. That's text one, okay, of the chapter. So we're going to chant text one together. Then I'm going to read the chapter summary, which actually is before it, precedes it, and that'll give everybody like a, you know, an overview of the what the entire chapter, what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is trying to, the points he's trying to bring out in this chapter. And then I'm going to go through the translations one by one. I'm going to start reading through the translations. I'm not going to chant the Sanskrit. I'm just going to say the English. Oh, sorry, you're right. Thank you. Well, Bengali and some Sanskrit, but mostly Bengali. And I'm just going to read the English. And when I see that everybody's getting really bored and falling asleep, at the appropriate time, I'll make some comments. And we'll just get through as much as we can, and I'll try to say a few words, you know, touching upon the essence of, you know, what we're trying to observe here and celebrate here, which is the appearance of Lord Chaitanya, the Mahavanya Avatar, the most magnanimous incarnation, and that'll be it. Okay? So without any further ado, we can chant this first text together like we normally chant the Bhagavatam verse every day. Sri Chaitanya Prabhum Bande. Sri Chaitanya Prabhum Bande. Yat Padashraya Viryata. Yat padashraya viryata sangranat yakara vratad sangranat yakara vratad agyasiddhanta sanmanim agyasiddhanta sanmanim Sri Chaitanya Prabhum Bande Yat padashraya viryata sangranat yakara vratad agyasiddhanta sanmanim Others. Thank you. Vaishnavis? Sri Chaitanya Prabhu, to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vande, I offer my respectful obeisances, yat, of whom, Pada Ashraya, of the shelter of the lotus feet, Viryata, from the power, Sangranati, collects, Akaravratat, from the multitude of minds in the form of scriptures. Agya, a fool. Siddhanta, of conclusion. Satmanem, the best jewels. Translation, and I'm going to cheat, as I said. I'm going to read the chapter summary as the purport. Okay, so translation is, I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. By the potency of the shelter of his lotus feet, even a fool can collect the valuable jewels of conclusive truth from the minds of the revealed scriptures. Okay, so chapter summary. In this chapter, the author has fully discussed the external reasons for the descent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, after displaying his pastimes as Lord Krishna, thought it wise to make his advent in the form of a devotee to explain personally the transcendental mellows of reciprocal service and love exchanged between himself and his servants, friends, parents, and fiancés. According to the Vedic literature, the foremost occupational duty for humanity in this age of Kali is Nam Sankirtan, or congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. The incarnation for this age especially preaches this process, but only Krishna himself can explain the confidential loving service performed in the four principal varieties of loving affairs between the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Lord Krishna therefore personally appeared with his plenary portions as Lord Chaitanya. As stated in this chapter, it was for this purpose that Lord Krishna appeared personally in Navadvip in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, so what we got from this paragraph here is that Krishna is desiring to explain personally the transcendental mellows of reciprocal service, the love exchange between himself and his servants, friends, parents, and fiancés, and his method for doing this will be propagating Nam Sankirtan. And because only, it's also pointed out, because only Krishna himself can do that, so Krishna decided to come himself as Lord Chaitanya in order to do that. So he's propagating, so Krishna's coming as himself, Lord Chaitanya, to propagate Nam Sankirtan for the purpose of explaining, attracting, and engaging people in these personal, these transcendental mellows of reciprocal service and love. Exchange between him and his servants, friends, parents, and fiancés. Okay? Second paragraph. Krishnadas Kaviraj has herein presented much authentic evidence from Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures to substantiate the identity of Lord Chaitanya with Sri Krishna himself. He has fully described bodily symptoms in Lord Chaitanya that are visible only in the person of the Supreme Lord. And he has proved that Lord Chaitanya appeared with his personal associates, Sri Nityananda Advaita Gadadhar, Srivas, and other devotees, to preach the specific significance of chanting Hare Krishna. The appearance of Lord Chaitanya is both significant and confidential. He can be appreciated only by his pure devotees and only through the process of devotional service. The Lord tried to conceal his identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by representing himself as a devotee, but his pure devotees could recognize him by his special features. The Vedas and Puranas foretell the appearance of Lord Chaitanya, but still he is sometimes called, significantly, the concealed descent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so basically, this paragraph, it's being stated that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he's going to make a case. You know, just like an attorney in a court, he has to make his case before the judge. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he's going to make a case. He's trying to make a case for to substantiate the identity of Lord Chaitanya as Sri Krishna himself. Okay? So if we get this far, we're going to hear a lot of verses that seem to be basically saying the same thing. See, that's because for that reason, he's making a case. He's, you know, it's just like an attorney in the court. He'll state some precedent cases, you know, Jones versus the state of New York, blah, 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 blah. You know, and the more precedent cases he can present to support his argument, then the stronger his case is. So in the same way, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is going to try to present verses from various scriptures. Not try. He's going to present verses from various scriptures to, make as strong a case as he possibly can that Lord Chaitanya is not different from Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second point that's being made here in this purport, in this particular chapter, is that it says that the appearance of Lord Chaitanya is both significant and confidential, and that he can be appreciated only by his pure devotees through the process of devotional service. And here's the sentence I wanted to comment on. It says, the Lord tried to conceal his identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by representing himself as a devotee, but his pure devotees could recognize him by his special features. Okay, so we're going to see who reads these books and knows this philosophy. From everybody, not just the new devotees, but from all the devotees among us here, okay, can anybody give me an example of that? What I'm after is an example of when a devotee, when the Lord tried to conceal his identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by representing himself as a devotee, but when a pure devotee was able to recognize him by his special features. There is, at least I'm aware of, one really good example of this. Okay, can you elaborate? What's the story surrounding it? Okay, that's a good example, I guess. Yeah, Rupa Goswami was able to detect that Lord Chaitanya was actually non-different from Krishna himself. The one I was thinking of, actually, no other takers? Any other takers? Yeah. Vamanadeva? Right. Yeah, okay, that's true. It's a different Leela, but this is... Right, there are probably many examples. That's a different Leela, of course, but this is the same principle that Bali was able to recognize that Vamanadeva was actually not just a dwarf, but actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example I was thinking of was Sanatana Goswami. In Madhya Leela, I can't remember which chapter, there's one place where Lord Chaitanya is describing, you know, the incarnations and particularly the incarnation. Oh, he's inquiring about the incarnation in the Kali Yuga. This was, yes, Sanatana Goswami was trying to catch Lord Chaitanya, you know, basically. So he's asking him, can you describe the symptoms of the incarnation in the Kali Yuga? So Lord Chaitanya starts describing, Sanatana Goswami is going, yeah, okay, right. And what about this? Is it? And then, you know, he's asking his questions in such a way that he's getting Lord Chaitanya to present verses which seem to be more and more clearly indicating that he's got to be talking about himself. Who else can he be talking about? You know, golden color, and he's, you know, accompanied by his associates, and he's always chanting the holy name. And then finally it got to the point where Sanatana Goswami was just about ready to, you know, kind of like clinch it. And Lord Chaitanya says, okay, so look, and he asked a question. I can't remember exactly what that question was, you know, but he asked a question that if Lord Chaitanya were to answer it directly, he would have just had to, basically he'd be admitting that, yes, you got it. But then Lord Chaitanya evaded the question. He just said, enough of your intelligent tricks. Now let's hear more about the other incarnations. So he went on. So like that. So yeah, there's an example of that. Sanatana Goswami was also, you know, he was aware of the fact that Lord Chaitanya was none other than Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then the final paragraph of this chapter summary is, Advaita Acharya was a contemporary of Lord Chaitanya's father. He felt sorry for the condition of the world because even after Lord Krishna's appearance, no one had interest in devotional service to Krishna. This forgetfulness was so overwhelming that Advaita Prabhu was convinced that no one but Lord Krishna himself could enlighten people about devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Advaita requested Lord Krishna to appear as Lord Chaitanya, offering tulsi leaves and Ganges water. He cried for the Lord's appearance. The Lord, being satisfied by his pure devotees, descends to satisfy them. As such, being pleased by Advaita Acharya, Lord Chaitanya appeared. So that's also another reason for the appearance of Lord Chaitanya, that the devotee, Advaita Acharya, was feeling very disturbed by the, you know, everybody's forgetfulness of Krishna. One point that I found interesting here is when it says here, he felt sorry for the condition of the world because even after Lord Krishna's appearance, no one had interest in devotional service to Krishna. And just a minor reflection, I was thinking like, well, wait a second. You know, Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, and this was taking place 500 years ago. Already 4,500 years had passed. So I was just thinking, you know, like, I mean, well, let's just think, what's something that happened 4,500 years ago? We could barely say. I mean, now this is the year 2000-something. So what happened 2,500 B.C.? Hardly anybody knows. You know, it's interesting that I guess the culture was so strong. He felt that people should still, you know, Krishna was appeared and here it, there it was 4,500 years later. He was feeling bad about that people weren't, you know, appreciating or still, you know, considering it significant that Krishna appeared such a long time ago. I mean, but it was such a long time it passed. But in any event, so the real major point here is that here it is, the pure devotee is, you know, requesting and engaging in devotional service, offering tulsi leaves and Ganges water, and that was a reason for the Lord's descent, along with his own reasons. Okay, so we'll read some translations now, and then at some point I'll just try to comment, say a few things about the big picture. Okay, so translation, this text too. All glories to Lord Chaitanya, all glories to Lord Nityananda, all glories to Advaita Chandra, and all glories to all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. I have given the purport of the third verse. Now, devotees, please listen to the meaning of the fourth with full attention. This is a very famous verse composed by Rupa Goswami, and it appeared in a play that he wrote called Vidagdha Madhava. May that Supreme Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachi Devi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost core of your heart. Resplendent with the radiance of molten gold, he has descended in the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to show what no incarnation has ever offered before, the most elevated mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love. As I said, very famous verse. Text 5, Lord Krishna, the son of the king of Raj, is the Supreme Lord. He eternally enjoys transcendental pastimes in his eternal abode, Goloka, which includes Rajdham. Once in a day of Brahma, he descends to this world to manifest his transcendental pastimes. So this is talking about Krishna now, and it's saying how once in a day of Lord Brahma, and there's 4.3 billion years, he descends to manifest his transcendental pastimes. Or actually, anyway, is it 4.3 is a half a day, right? 8.6 is the full day. I'm a bit forgetful here for a second. Does anybody know? Lord Brahma's day is 12 hours is 4.3, right? And a full day is 8.6. Okay, so anyway, once in a day of Brahma, Lord Krishna descends and says, we know that, this is the translation again, we know that there are four yugas, namely Satya, Treta, Dwarpa, and Kali. These four together constitute one Divya Yuga. 71 Divya Yugas, and 71 cycles of the four ages, constitute one Manvantar, and there are 14 Manvantars in one day of Brahma. The present Manu, who is the seventh, is called Vaivaswata. 27 Divya Yugas of his age have now passed. So, 14 Manus, we're in the seventh Manu, his name is Vaivaswata, and of the 71 cycles of the four ages, 27 have passed, and we're in the 27th of that, of the, in the Kali Yuga, of the 27th of the Divya Yugas, or the you know, the cycles of the ages. Okay. So at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, at the 28th, of the 28th Divya Yuga, at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, of the 28th Divya Yuga, Lord Krishna appears on earth with full paraphernalia of his eternal Vrajadham. Okay, I'm just going to read one sentence from the purport here. It says, well, a couple. It says, now is the term of Vaivaswatamana, during which Lord Chaitanya appears. First, Lord Krishna appears at the close of the Dwapara Yuga of the 28th Divya Yuga. And then Lord Chaitanya appears in the Kali Yuga of the same Divya Yuga. Okay, so, 27 have passed. So we're in the 28th. And first, Lord Krishna appears in the Dwapara Yuga of the 28th. And then, and just right after that, you know, 4,500 years after that, Lord Chaitanya appears in that same Divya Yuga, you know, the 28th Divya Yuga. It says, Lord Chaitanya appears in the Kali Yuga of the same Divya Yuga. Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya appear once in each day of Brahma, or once in 14 manvantars, each of 71 Divya Yugas in duration. So, very rare. Okay, reading on. Servitude, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love are the four transcendental mellows. By the devotees who cherish these four mellows, Lord Krishna is subdued. Absorbed in such transcendental love, Lord Sri Krishna enjoys in Vraj. And his devoted servants, friends, parents, and conjugal lovers. Lord Krishna enjoys his transcendental pastimes as long as he wishes, and then he disappears. After disappearing, however, he thinks thus. For a long time I have not bestowed unalloyed loving service to me upon the inhabitants of the world. Without such loving attachment, the existence of material world is useless. Everywhere in the world, people worship me according to scriptural injunctions, but simply by following such regulative principles, one cannot attain the loving sentiments of the devotees in Vrajabhumi. Once again, this is Krishna thinking now. He's saying, knowing my opulences, the whole world looks upon me with awe and veneration, but devotion made feeble by such reverence does not attract me. By performing such regulated devotional service in awe and veneration, one may go to Vaikuntha and attain the four kinds of liberation. These liberations are Sharshti, achieving opulences equal to those of the Lord, Sarupya, having a form the same as the Lord, Samipya, living as a personal associate of the Lord, and Salokya, living on a Vaikuntha planet. Devotees never accept Sayuja, however, since that is oneness with Brahman. I shall personally inaugurate the religion of the age, Nam Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name. I shall make the world dance in ecstasy, realizing the four mellows of loving devotional service. So in other words, through this process of congregational chanting of the holy name, Krishna's reflecting or thinking, I shall make the world dance in ecstasy, realizing the four mellows of loving devotional service. So this is a way to realize the four mellows of loving devotional service. I shall accept the role of a devotee and shall teach devotional service by practicing it myself. There's a very famous verse also, because this, it's a two-line verse, but one of the lines is Apani Achari Bhakti Sikhaimu Sabare, which is like just what that's being said there, that Lord Chaitanya, he accepts the role of devotee. He teaches devotional service by practicing it himself. Apani Achari Bhakti Sikhaimu Sabare. This is continuing on. Krishna is still thinking here. Unless one practices devotional service himself, he cannot teach it to others. This conclusion is indeed confirmed throughout the Gita and the Bhagavatam. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice or descend the Bharata and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. If I did not show the proper principles of religion, all these worlds would fall into ruin. I would be the cause of unwanted population and would spoil all living beings. Whatever actions a great man performs, common men follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, the whole world pursues. My preliminary portions can establish the principles of religion for each age. No one but me, however, can bestow the kind of loving service performed by the residents of Vraj. There may be many all auspicious incarnations of the personality of Godhead, But who other than Lord Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna, can bestow love of God upon the surrendered souls? Therefore, in the company of my devotees, I shall appear on earth and perform various colorful pastimes. And then break now. Thinking thus, that was all Krishna thinking, okay? Thinking thus, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna himself, descended at Nadia early in the age of Kali. Thus, the lion-like Lord Chaitanya has appeared in Navadvip. He has the shoulders of a lion, the powers of a lion, the loud voice of a lion. May that lion be seated in the core of the heart of every living being. Thus, with his resounding roar, he may drive away one's elephantine vices. In his early pastimes, he is known as Vishvambar because he floods the world with the nectar of devotion and thus saves the living beings. The verbal root, Dubrin, which is the root of the word Vishvambar, indicates nourishing and maintaining. He, Lord Chaitanya, nourishes and maintains the three worlds by distributing love of God. In his latest pastimes, he is known as Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya. He blesses the whole world by teaching about the name and fame of Lord Sri Krishna. A little bit more I'm going to read, and then I'm going to stop and say something. Knowing him, Lord Chaitanya, to be the incarnation for Kali Yuga, Garga Muni, during the naming ceremony of Krishna, predicted his appearance. This is it. This is the prediction. This boy has three other colors, white, red, and yellow, as he appears in different ages. Now he has appeared in a transcendental blackish color. White, red, and yellow, these are the three bodily lusters that the Lord, the husband of the goddess of fortune, assumes in the ages of Satya, Treta, and Kali, respectively. Now, in the Dwapara Yuga, the Lord has descended in a blackish hue. This is the essence of the statements in the Puranas and other Vedic literatures with reference to the context. Continue quoting here. In the Dwapara Yuga, the personality of Godhead appears in a blackish hue. He is dressed in yellow. He holds his own weapons, and he is decorated with the Kastuba jewel and marks of Srivatsa. This is how his symptoms are described. Text 40. And I think this is the last one I'll read. The religious practice for the age of Kali is to broadcast the glories of the holy name. Only for this purpose has the Lord, in a yellow color, descended as Lord Chaitanya. And I'll read this purport and then just say a few things and that'll be it. So, in the age of Kali, the practical system of religion for everyone is the chanting of the name of Godhead. This was introduced in this age by Lord Chaitanya. Bhakti Yoga actually begins with chanting of the holy name, as confirmed by Madhvacharya in his commentary on the Mundaka Upanishad. He quotes this verse from the Narayana Samhita. Dwaparayar Jani Vishnu Pancharatrais Tukevalai Kalotu Namamatrena Pujate Bhagavan Hari. In the Dwapara Yuga, people should worship Lord Vishnu only by regulative principles of the Narada Pancharatra and other such authorized books. In the age of Kali, however, people should simply chant the holy names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. End quote. So that's a quote from the Narayana Samhita, a verse which is found in the Mundaka Upanishad. Goes on. In the age of Kali, however, the Hare Krishna mantra is specifically mentioned in many Upanishads, such as the Kali Santara Upanishad, where it is said, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Iti sodasa kam nam nam, Kali kama sanasanam. After searching through all Vedic literatures, one cannot find a method of religion more sublime for this age than the chanting of Hare Krishna. Okay. So what we're hearing here is Lord Krishna, he's desiring to bestow the highest benediction on people. Even a benediction greater than enabling them to just go back to Vaikuntha, right? We heard him, you know, his reflections there earlier. And he's pointing out, and he was thinking that, well, you know, if people just follow the regulative principles like that, and at best they'll go to Vaikuntha and they'll get these, you know, four types of liberations which are mentioned, but I want them to experience what the residents of Vrindavan are experiencing, the residents of Vrajbhumi. So as a means to that end, Krishna's comes himself as Lord Chaitanya and introduces this congregational chanting of the holy name. Okay? So it's a special mercy. It's actually a special mercy. And, you know, this is a very important point for us to understand that, you know, how fortunate we are, you know, to be present now on earth, and way more than that, to be actually, you know, participating in the Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Because even among different incarnations of Krishna, as Krishna himself was mentioning when he was reflecting, you know, they're undoubtedly all auspicious, but they only Lord Chaitanya is doing this. Only Lord Chaitanya is giving the jivas the opportunity to taste or experience these rasas, you know, these higher rasas like that. And he's doing it among people who ordinarily would not be qualified. Just to kind of substantiate that point, like in the Bhagavad Gita, well, first, in the prayers of Queen Kunti says, Tata Paramahamsanam Muninam Amalatmanam Bhakti Yoga Vidana Tananatam something something he striya. I can't remember two Sanskrit words, but the what? You remember? Okay, thank you. But the gist of it is that she's saying that she's, you know, praying. This is part of her prayers to Krishna, and she's saying that, what's my qualification? I'm a woman. You know, actually, this knowledge you're giving of devotional service is meant for the Paramahamsas. Paramahamsa means topmost swan-like man, and the Muninam Atmalatmanam is, you know, the topmost thinkers. See, I'm just a woman. How am I supposed to understand this? You see, so she's, you know, she's aware of that. She's aware that generally speaking, devotional service is, you know, not for any just Tom, Dick, and Harry. It's for like the most elevated personalities, and this is further confirmed by Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, "Yesham phantikatam papam ginanam punyakarmanam tadvanvamohaniya mukta bhajanti mam dridavrataha." He says, "Only those who have acted piously in this life and in previous lives, not just one life, in this life and in previous lives, and whose sinful activities are completely eradicated, can engage in my devotional service with firm determination." And Prabhupada, in his purport, doesn't say anything different. He says, yeah, he says, for those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, devotional service is going to be very difficult. And he goes, in the next sentence, he says, only those who have passed their lives, plural, practicing the regulative principles, can, you know, take to devotional service. See, so generally speaking, it's like a PhD program. You know, sometimes we forget that. This is like a real, you know, Bhakti Yoga, being having the opportunity to engage in devotional service is like being admitted into a real PhD program. Just a little bit further evidence on that. Earlier on in that same chapter, seventh chapter, Krishna says, what's that famous verse? Manushanam sahasreshu kaschit jadadisidaye yatatam apisinanam kaschit mam vetitatata. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, maybe one knows me in truth. So Krishna's making the point that, you know, to actually come to the point of knowing him, which is only elsewhere he says in the Bhagavad Gita, which could only be achieved by engaging in devotional service, it's rare. There's, out of many thousands among men, there's going to be one who even tries to understand he's not the body. And then among thousands of those, maybe one's going to make it to devotional service and understand Krishna. And then 7:19, he says, Bahunam janmanamante ganavam mam papajate vasudeva savarmiti samahamasadulama. He said, after many births and deaths, one who's actually in knowledge, there's one of these ganis, engages, after many births and deaths, one who's actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very, very rare. So in other words, it's a rare person who gets to come to the point of devotional service, and even then, it's only after many, many births that the penny drops and he really does it. You know, he really kind of surrenders to Krishna. So it's like a rare, rare thing for somebody to, you know, just like it's a rare, rare thing for somebody to be in a PhD program. And it's even rarer for somebody to complete it and get the PhD. I mean, I don't have any idea what the numbers are, but I mean, if you took, everybody goes to school, right? So of all the people that, you know, are in the educational system, what percent of the people that enter into the educational system actually get as far as, you know, being in a PhD program and actually get a PhD? It's probably some very, very small percent, you see? So it's an analogy. So in the same way, here we are, Lord Chaitanya, it's almost like he's saying, okay, It's almost like USC or UCLA was saying, okay, you know what? We're going to do something far out here. We're having an open enrollment for this PhD program. Ordinarily, you have to have a bachelor's and a master's, and you have to have your grades at a certain level here. But you know what? It's open enrollment. Anybody who can read and write, let's say, they make some small, you know, prerequisite there. Anybody who can read and write can come forward, and as long as they come to the classes and do the homework and they're in the program and, you know, they have to follow some rules, easy rules and regulations, like it's something like that. You see, it's just like, wow, that's amazing. That's like, what an incredible concession that is. So that's something like Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Because as I said, it's ordinarily this devotional service, what to speak of devotional service, appreciating these, you know, the higher rasas, which is what Lord Chaitanya was referring to here, devotional service as is experienced by the residents of Brajabhumi, that's for like very, very elevated souls. But here, you know, what's happening, and with the advent of Lord Chaitanya, he's making it available to basically anybody who's prepared to accept it, you know. And Krishna gives a hint, and so it's not like Krishna's contradicting himself. It's mercy, and mercy means that you can give it to anybody that you want, regardless of what they've done and what they haven't done. It's Krishna's free choice. You know, you can't tell Krishna, Krishna can't be bound to just saying he can only give his mercy to these people only when they've done this or they haven't done that. No. So this is just mercy that what's happening here. And I lost my train of thought there for a second, but let's see if I can get it back. Oh yeah, thank you. And thank you, Krishna. Matux Matir Yanama Poanam Cha. Okay. Yeah, so a hint of that is given by Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, where he says, Mam hi partha vayapasritya yepi suya papayonaya studiya vaishastata sujas tepi yanti param gatin. So that's in the ninth chapter. See, so in the seventh chapter, he makes those different shlokas. He makes the point about, you know, who's eligible for devotional service. But he does give a hint, you know, in the ninth chapter there, that he is willing to lower the bar. Because he says, you know, even if they be of lower birth, women, vaishas, sudras, if they take shelter of me in devotional service, and if they take fully shelter of me, they can also achieve the supreme destination. They can also go back home, back to Godhead. So Krishna's, you know, he's indicating then that, well, you know, generally speaking, you got to be this devotional service for the topmost elevated personalities who have, you know, free from sinful reactions, who have engaged in pious activities in this life and in previous lives, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I'm a nice guy, so if anybody just completely takes shelter of me, okay, we'll make an exception. If they really do it sincerely, we'll just overlook the fact that they haven't overcome all their sinful reactions and they haven't engaged in pious activities in this life and in previous lives, and we'll take them back anyway. Okay, so. And Lord Chaitanya even takes it further. You know, he doesn't just take them back to Vaikuntha. He's prepared to take those same kind of personalities who just take shelter. You know, that's the one qualification, take shelter. He's prepared to not just take him back to Vaikuntha, but he's prepared to take him all the way back to Goloka Vrindavan and allow him to be, you know, engaged in those higher rasas. See, so he's even, you know, taking it one step further. Now, final point, and then we'll end, is that in the purport to that verse, that Bhagavad Gita verse, you know, Mam hi partha vayapasritya, about the, you know, the Striyas, Vaishyas, and the Sudras, right? Because Krishna is saying, you know, even if they take shelter of me, right, they can go back to the supreme destination. The point Prabhupada makes is that the way to do that is by taking shelter of the devotee of Krishna. And he quotes, he cites the verse from the Bhagavatam, second canto, can't remember which chapter, Kirata Hunandara Pulinda Pulkasha Abira Sumba Yavana Kasaraya Yene Chapapa Yadapashraya Shraya Sujanti Tasmai Pabhavishnave Namaha. And he makes that point. That verse means that even if one is among these considered races that are considered outcasts, in other words, you know, there's Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, and below that there's Yavana, Chandala, Malecha, and then there's even below that. And these ones I just mentioned, the Kiratas, the Hundras, Palindas, Pulkasha, they're even considered lower. You know, sometimes you hear Prabhupada refer to 10th class man. Well, these races, you know, like they're among like the, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, et cetera, et cetera. So the point Sukadeva Goswami's making is that even personalities from among those lower social stratas, if they take shelter of a devotee, you know, if they take shelter of the Prabhavishna, the devotee of Krishna, by the power of his connection with Krishna, they can be delivered. See? So that's the point. So my final point then is this, that this is an amazing opportunity. You know, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, and he's coming to give something that even Krishna doesn't give when he comes, right? These higher mellows like that, higher understandings of devotional service. And the way to access his mercy, of course, is, you know, participate in the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting in general. But more specifically, the way to access his mercy is through his devotee. Just like, you know, every morning we chant, only by the mercy of the spiritual master, one gets the mercy of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, no one can make any advancement. So the way to access the mercy of Lord Chaitanya is by his devotee. The way to access the mercy of that devotee is by following his instructions, you know, which we're all aware of. And so just to make it really practical, you know, and this is like an opinion, but I think it's an opinion that is like not just... it's based on like scripture, that to get the mercy, if somebody's seriously interested in trying to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, they should consider the instructions, you know, that we've received from Srila Prabhupada as sacrosanct. Sacrosanct. That means sacred and sanctified. No, it's like you can't rationalize them. You can't, like, there's no way around it. No, it's like, it's basically, we're doing it. What we're doing right here, sitting here listening to this class, which is particularly hard, sorry. No, but all the things we're doing, they're exactly what Prabhupada gave us. This is the way to access the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Getting up, you know, coming to Mangal Arati, Tulsi Puja, chanting the Japa, you know, exactly what we're doing. We should consider it sacrosanct. It's the instruction of Prabhupada. There's no way, I mean, you know, you could say, well, so-and-so big devotee, I don't see that they do that, or so-and-so big devotees have left, too. In other words, I don't think it's better to try to cultivate an attitude of, I got to do this, rather than cultivate an attitude of, well, when can I start not doing this? You know, when am I old enough, I've been around long enough time so that I could get out of that or slip out of that? This is my realization anyway. I'm working on trying to be more rigidly follow as opposed to less, and that's as my attempt to access the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So I think it's, you know, that's my humble personal realization that this is coming into Gaurpurni. We want the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, and rightly so. That's a good desire. And for those, I would suggest that for those, you know, to be seriously endeavoring for that means to try to become more serious about following the instructions that we receive from Prabhupada, the basic ones, all of them, but particularly the basic ones, you know, at least if you're to start off with, if you're not already doing that. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah, Prabhu, Dimitri. Yeah, start with the microphone so people on the internet can hear and the devotees can hear.
And while we intensifying this Harinam Sankirtan.
Is it on?
Lord Chaitanya clearly explains that we need to do Harinam Sankirtan in this age of Kali to achieve success and so we can be delivered. Mm-hmm. And my question is also that we need to do this very intense to achieve success. So while we intensifying our Harinam Sankirtan as our main Yuha Dharma, what is the role of other services while we're doing this intense Harinam?
Okay. So I understand your question. And I would say the best way to get insight to understand what the correct balance is to try to understand what emphasis Prabhupada gave. You know, Prabhupada introduced us, and it's like if somebody walks in the door today, reads the books, and then tries to figure out how to engage in devotional service, that's good, and they're going to get benefit. But to get the maximum benefit, they would be better off if they read the books, you know, got inspired by that, and then approached somebody who's supposed to be an advanced devotee, you know, senior advanced person in the movement, and said to them, okay, so practically speaking now, I mean, what do I do? What do I do first? What do I do second? Should I just stay in this temple room and chant all day? Or should I just go out on the street and chant all day? Well, how do I actually go about applying this in my life? And for that, you get direction from the devotee. You see, Prabhupada's no longer personally here with us. Of course, he gave us a lot of direction in his books. But you get direction from those who he received direction from him. That would be my suggestion. That you know, the best way to understand how to engage in this Harinam Sankirtan or, you know, the Yuga Dharma is to make a real genuine effort to try to understand, well, how did Prabhupada implement it? You know, when Prabhupada was here, what was the emphasis? You know, what did he tell the devotees to do? Did he have them just, as I said, chanting out on the street all day? Or did he have them in the temple room just chanting japa all day or chanting kirtan all day? What exactly did Prabhupada have us do? And then you'll understand what the correct balance is. And I would suggest it's in general, it's not chanting all day long. There's other activities such as preaching, book distribution, different preaching programs and so many different things, you see. And to really follow or to really to participate in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement properly, you know, you gotta take all that into consideration. Anyway, the basic idea is Prabhupada. Just do it the way Prabhupada gave it to us. Don't try to go over Prabhupada and just figure out how to, you know, be a kirtaniya without reference to the way Prabhupada presented it to us and the different emphases Prabhupada gave and what he didn't emphasize. Anybody else like to help me on that point? That's an important point. I mean, does anybody disagree with what I just said? Any of my senior guard brothers here? Yeah. Well, I think he was in so many words, he was asking, what's the balance, you know? I mean, this is Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, the chanting. And I got the impression he was asking, well, you know, just what role does that chanting have? Do we chant all day or you know, Yeah. Yeah, Archita wants to say something. This is an important point.
This is why there's an institution. You see, some people try to do it individually. Like you say, they read the books, they get the idea, and then they run around trying to do this, that, that. But what Prabhupada established as being important and what his predecessors in the Gaudiya Math didn't do is he stressed the institution. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, before he left, he stressed that I've created an institution and I want you to keep it going. And the way to do that is create a governing body. They didn't do that. And therefore, the Gaudiya Math, even though some of them continued preaching, they became ineffective. Srila Prabhupada's movement is effective because he emphasized the institution even before he left. When people would bombard him with questions, he said, go ask the temple president, go ask the GBC. He wanted to instill in us this point that there is an institution and that you're a part of, and you have to go along with the institution. And sometimes what the institution may ask you to do may not resonate with what you want to do at that particular moment. Or even when Prabhupada was here, like when he told Brahmananda and Satsarup to keep working and give money to the movement. He didn't want them to stop their jobs at that particular point. So there is an institution, you're a part of an institution, you have to follow along with the institution. And being a member of an institution means that sometimes the order you're going to get may not resonate with what you want to do. You may think, I just want to go out on the street and chant all day. And this is the Sankirtan movement of the Lord, and that makes sense. But at that particular moment, the institution, which means it's run by Guru and temple presidents and the GBCs, they may ask you to do something else. They may even ask you as a top book distributor to stop distributing books and come and manage a temple for a few months. So the point is, you're a member of an institution, and you should go along with the institutional flow. And yes, we have checks and balances to see if the institution is going along with what the founder Acharya wanted us to do. So that's there. Prabhupada's instructions are there. But Prabhupada himself sometimes did things that may not seem... And he stressed also the Brihat Mridanga, that is even better chanting. He said the Mridanga can be heard for a few blocks, but the books will be heard around the world. So there's so many instructions, but the point is, the main point is, you're part of an institution, go along with the institution.
Amla Bhakta Maharaj.
Just on another topic, in regard to the point that you were making of how Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, differs so markedly from himself in his earlier Krishna incarnation, is mentioned very clearly in the 18th chapter, in which Krishna says, and he actually puts some limits and prohibitions on who this knowledge should be given to. Mm-hmm. This confidential knowledge may never be given to those who are not austere or devoted or engage in devotional service, nor to those who are envious of me. So he put some limits there, you see. Don't give it out so freely, so easily. If they are envious of me, if they're not devoted, they're not engaged in devotional service, be very careful, be very discriminating, be very thoughtful as to who you give it to. Not Lord Chaitanya. He walked on the streets and just literally gave it. Not only did he give it out to others, but he flooded people with such feelings of transcendental bliss that they couldn't stop chanting Hare Krishna. And not being able to stop themselves, they would chant it to others, and they themselves would be affected by this, or infected, however you want to call it, with the same potency, and they couldn't stop chanting. So he spread it, especially when he went down to South India, and he had a lot of obstacle in that particular area. So to do it rather rapidly, he just flooded everyone and anyone with transcendental bliss. There's that very funny story about the fisherman, you know, who caught Lord Chaitanya in his net. And so when he pulled him out of the net, and he just by touching him, just by associating with him, he became overwhelmed with just transcendental bliss, which he thought was the result of a ghost inhabiting him. It was rather funny. So, of course, Sarup Damodar Maharaj, he explained and clarified. But anyway, main point is that Lord Chaitanya gives it out to anyone and everyone, whereas Krishna gives it out with more discrimination and with more carefulness and with more thoughtfulness. And so that's why we call him the most munificent incarnation. And his munificence is in... of course, the word itself, munificent, means to be very super charitable. And that's exactly what he's done. He's been charitable, not caring whether people are rich or poor, learned or unlearned, Brahmin, or as you just said in the class, lower than Sudra, doesn't matter. Give them the holy name and raise them to a higher status so that the whole world will be benefited and the Kali Yuga will be defeated, and this 10,000 years of mini Sati Yuga will be implemented.
Yeah, thank you for that beautiful comment. And hopefully in the days to come now, we're going to have more beautiful pastimes like that about the unlimited mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai.